We're in Advent. We're on our way to Christmas, and Advent is about waiting and expectation. But we're also closing out our certainty series. And the message today is there's something that you can be sure of, even in a time of uncertainty and chaos. And the thing that we can be sure of today is that Jesus is coming soon. That's the message today. Jesus is coming soon. You can be sure of it. You're like, well, Louis, how do you know this? Do you have the inside track on some astrological phenomenon? No. Do you have access to some prophecy that maybe we haven't heard yet? No. Then how can you say so confidently today and with certainty today that Jesus is coming soon? I can say this today, you can receive this today, because Jesus told us he's coming soon. So I'm certain that Jesus is coming soon because he said so. He told his followers in John 14, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going." This has been the plan all along, that Jesus, yes, would come at Christmas and do what only he could do, but that he would come again to planet Earth. And I want you to know Jesus is coming soon. Now, we have an asterisk after the word soon, and so we need to look down into that just for a moment and get our hearts and our minds around soon. So we're putting up the fine print today, just in full disclosure, that soon, in the biblical sense, is a relative term when used in relation to the eternal nature of the Almighty, who exists outside time and space, yet concurrently operates within the confines of finite human history as I am. God the same yesterday, today, forever. Thus, the use of the term soon, as understood by the eternal mind, may be interpreted to mean promptly, as in right now, or to mean a future time, say within the next 100 to 1,000 years, the latter of which in God time is the equivalent of one human day, therefore soon. Jesus is coming soon. The goal in this message is to listen to what Jesus has said, to make 7 obvious observations, and then to offer 7 essential applications. So number one, let's listen to what Jesus said. I'm opening my Bible to Matthew chapter 24. And in this text, we know that Jesus has arrived in Jerusalem prior to the crucifixion and resurrection. And so the theologians call these chapters and this teaching the Olivet Discourse, because Jesus is on the Mount of Olives. And doesn't that sound intriguing and exciting? Don't you want to text someone right now and say, "We're in the Olivet Discourse today. Get on board quick. Get online." But Jesus is in the last days, so he can see the cross from where he is right now. He can see the city. He knows how it's going to play out. Passover is just a few days away, and Jesus is unpacking some incredible truth. In fact, when I look in the way my Bible's laid out, I've got a little bit of chapter 23, all of 24, the first few verses of 25. It's all in red, except for two verses. And one of the two verses is a descriptor telling us where Jesus is while he's teaching. And the other of the two verses that's not in red is a question that his disciples ask him. And when they ask the question, then he gives the answer and he goes for a while with the answer. So if it's okay with everyone here, and even if it's not, I would just like to read all of Matthew 24. So let's take a deep breath and say, Lord, thank you for the opportunity today to sit under the reading of the very words of the Son of God. The header says, signs of the end of the age. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. Do you see all these things? He asked. I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? Jesus answered, watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming I am the Christ, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So when you are standing in the holy place, the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world unto now, and never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles to deceive even the elect, if that were possible. See, I have told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, there he is out in the desert, do not go out. Or here he is in the inner room, do not believe it. for his lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, the vultures will gather. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth. This generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the day of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field. One will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill. One will be taken and the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would have never let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, "My master is staying away a long time," and he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Thank God for the power of his word. Seven obvious observations. Number one, because we don't want to get lost in the weeds, which is what normally happens when we start talking about anything prophetic or about the coming of the Lord or about the end times. It seems like pretty quickly we get lost in the weeds. I'm not applying that there are any weeds in the text of the Word of God today. I'm just saying let's look at the obvious things that God wants us to see. Number one, there is a context within the context. And so as we're thinking about the end times and realizing today that Jesus is coming soon and we're hearing of Jesus teaching, there's context and then there's context and then there's context. There's the context of history that's past. We've got Daniel in the mix. There's the context of the present moment. There's context of history that's coming very soon. And then there's the greater context of the end of the age. We see two questions that are asked to Jesus. Tell us, when will this happen? In other words, you said this temple's coming down. When is that going to happen? And the second question, what will be the sign of your coming and the sign of the end of the age? And so you can't get confused then when you get down to verse 34, and Jesus says, I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Well, in the context, the temple has already been destroyed. The temple is now rebuilt, but in AD 70, it's going to be destroyed again by Titus. And so all the people listening to Jesus teach are actually going to see all the stones of the temple fall one on top of the other in 40 years from this moment in AD 70 as Titus destroys the temple. So every time we're reading and all through this today, there's going to be context within the context. That's an obvious observation. Secondly, deception is the enemy game. So the first thing Jesus tells us as he begins to answer the two questions is, verse 4, watch out that no one deceives you. And then as you look through the text, I put a little dot in my text every time the word deceive appears later down through the text. The game, you see that in verse 11, verse 24, is deception. So the enemy's plan for you and for me, in light of the fact that Jesus is coming soon, is that you would get deceived. The third big observation is that faith is going to wane. Verse 12 says that as wickedness increases, this is such a heartbreaking verse, that the faith of most will grow cold. The fourth big observation is that the hinge point in the coming of Jesus is the fulfillment of the Great Commission. It says in verse 14, this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. Now, that's not necessarily all countries. That's ethnos is what the word is there, to all peoples on earth, and then the end will come. So the thing that triggers all of this and sets it all in motion is the proclamation of the gospel kingdom of Jesus to every ethnos on planet Earth. So the Great Commission, just to be clear, is still go you therefore into all the world and preach the gospel to all people. This is still the mission of the people of God. The fifth big observation here is this thing that comes in the next verse called the abomination that causes desolation. Now, this is one of those passages that a lot of theologians will debate very robustly. But just to break it down into its obvious observation, Daniel was prophesying about the rise of a person who would absolutely come in abject opposition to the worship of God in the temple. And so you think about this, Daniel's whole writing opens with the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because Nebuchadnezzar has built an idol of himself and said, if you don't bow down to this idol, you're going in the fiery furnace. And so we've already got a ransacking of the temple in Jerusalem, we have now exiles in Babylon, and we have someone putting himself in a position to say, I am God, and you bow down to me, or you go in the fiery furnace. That is the abomination of desolation in a nutshell. And Daniel is predicting that there's going to be more of this. And we see this in 165 or so BC when Antiochus Epiphanes the IV comes and he invades Jerusalem, this Greek ruler of the Seleucid kingdom. And history tells us he comes right into the temple, just absolutely puts a halt to the worship of God Yahweh in the temple, sacrifices a swine on the altar, and puts up an idol of Zeus in the temple of God. The abomination is coming against the temple and precisely coming against the altar, specifically coming against the blood of the Lamb. And so this is the abomination. It's idolatry, but it's idolatry that's so brazen that it would stand right in the midst of the story of Jesus and say, forget about the blood of the Lamb. I am the one who is to be worshiped and to be exalted. And the result of this act brings desolation. And desolation means a wasteland, barrenness, empty, meaningless, and futile. And so if you ask the average psychologist to describe the psyche of the human condition, they would say to you, futile, meaningless, and empty. Why? Because man already is trying to supplant God, and already it's fall in the church. And hearts are growing cold, and it's brazen in the world, and people are standing in the holy place saying, forget about the blood of the Lamb. We are good to save ourselves. The sixth big and obvious observation is that Christ's return is a public event. Verse 27 says, that for as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. And then the seventh big observation that I think it's important for us to see is that everyone won't make it in the end. Two men are in a field, one is taken, and one is left. Two women are using a handmill. One is taken up, and one is left behind. So what are the seven applications that we should walk away with today? In other words, does Jesus' planned and clearly announced return impact our lives in any significant ways? Number one application is to live alert, not alarmed. Don't you love that in verse 6? These are Jesus' words, by the way. He said, you'll hear of wars and rumors of wars. Now, every time we hear of wars and rumors of wars, or the moons are doing something, or the sun did something, or there's an asteroid out there that's coming near Earth in 20 years or 30 years or 15 years, or the election went this way or the election went that way, or some ruler in some country said this or some ruler said that, or there was an earthquake or a tsunami or this or that. Normally, the average believer I know gets pretty alarmed. And Jesus himself said, don't be alarmed. When you hear the wars and the rumors of the wars, when there's earthquakes in various places, don't be alarmed. Well, why shouldn't we be alarmed? Because I've already told you how all this is going to play out. So instead of being alarmed when you read something or hear something, or when that little prophetic email comes in the inbox and it's like, oh my goodness, somebody knows something that I need to know. So no, you don't need to be alarmed. What I would prefer you to be is alert. I prefer you to wake up tomorrow and go, Jesus is coming soon, and he could come imminently, immediately, today. He could come in 100 years, which is also soon, but he could come right now, and I want to live alert, but I don't want to be frantic, and I don't want to live alarmed. Why? Jesus said, don't be alarmed. I'm going to put my confidence in him. The second application is to stay close to the original, the OG. Like, what do you mean by that? Well, if the enemy's game is deception, then what's the best way to not get deceived? Stay real close to the OG. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Keep your ears attuned to Jesus. Think your life in the words of Jesus, and don't listen to anything else but Jesus. Because deception wants to get our eyes off of who he is and to get our minds onto what they say. So here would be a great, I think, simple application takeaway, knowing that Jesus is coming soon. Focus your life on the revealed Jesus, not on some hidden prophecy. In other words, just keep leaning into Jesus every day versus digging around and looking for and listening to the next prophecy that somebody's going to say. Just keep your eyes on Jesus, because when he's coming, and if he's coming soon, then you'll have your eyes locked on him when he arrives. The third application is live ready. This is what Jesus says in the text, verse 44. He says, so you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Unless you expect him every hour. Be ready. You say, well, Louis, I would kind of like to know, like, what day is coming. And I say, why? Well, because if I knew what day he was coming, that would set in motion a series of events. Well, then you should set in motion that series of events. Like, if I knew it was next Thursday, I have an aunt in Toledo, and I would get there. You should call her. If I knew he was coming in February, I would take some of my cash out of my stash, and I would invest it in gospel proclamation among the ethnos. Well, you should do that. You see, what the enemy has got us stuck in is fixating on what day, when Jesus is saying, be ready today. The fourth application is draw close to the flame. Have you ever been at a camp out and there was a fire going? It was that time of year where it was just getting colder and colder and colder, and everybody just kept scooting up closer and closer and closer to the fire. By the end of the night, everybody's knees are right up next to the thing because, you know, you're trying to get one more log on there, and people are scavenging all for little twigs and sticks, and we're as close as we can get and close as we can get. We're just trying to stay close to the fire. And I believe that in this age, this is the number one operating mindset for the believer, is stay close to the flame. We know in Scripture the flame is the Holy Spirit of God. So stay close to the flame and live in a community of people who want to get around the flame. Live in a community of people who know Jesus is coming soon, a kingdom mindset people, a people who have heart, who's on fire for Jesus. So if yours wanes a little, theirs doesn't. And when theirs wanes a little, yours doesn't. And you're not just hanging out with people who are talking about the wind. You're hanging out with people who want to stay close to the flame. Because in the end, the telltale sign of the Son of Man coming is that most people's hearts are going to grow cold. So what am I doing today to make sure my heart stays close to the flame? The fifth takeaway is become an evangelist. You become an evangelist. Because everybody's not going to make it. But everybody deserves an opportunity to hear the gospel. In this text, several times, Jesus uses the word the elect. Going to gather the elect from the four winds. They're going to do miracles, some of these false prophets. So just check that one out. They're going to do signs and wonders. They're going to look like the real thing, and they're going to deceive even the elect, if that's possible, he says. So we could get into a debate about what the elect means, and if there's some called the elect, then why do I need to be concerned about telling my coworker about Jesus? Apparently, there's already some people who are going to make it and some people who aren't going to make it. Here's the thing. Skip the debate and spread the news. Because Jesus said, go you therefore into all the earth and preach the gospel to all nations. So, but what about the this and the that and the this and the that? How about just the words of Jesus? Go ye therefore into all the earth. Go to your work, go to your family, go to your neighborhood, go over wherever you go and become an evangelist. Why should I become an evangelist, Louis? You're an evangelist, we've got you. I am not your evangelist for your people. You are your evangelist for your people. And if Jesus is coming soon, you want to arrive in heaven as an evangelist. And in the moment he comes through the door, you want to be telling somebody about Jesus. Number six, make the move. In other words, transfer into heaven whatever you'd like there. Now, this is a little bit interesting, but I haven't really ever thought about it quite like this. But heaven is an amazing accommodation. You know, when Jesus said, I'm going away, and I'm going to prepare a place for you, that where I am, you can be also. So there's an accommodation being made for you in heaven, but it's unfurnished. You're like, oh, and what are you talking about? No, you furnish it. You're like, well, that sounds like some kind of legalistic left turn. No, the grace of God gets you alive forever and prepares an accommodation for you in heaven, but it's unfurnished currently. You furnish it, Jesus said. Store up for yourselves treasure in heaven. You're like, well, I don't have a lot to start with. I only have a small amount of money. In fact, I'm actually in debt right now. These other family, they had a lot of money. Their parents gave them a boatload of money so that they can furnish theirs better than mine. No, you can furnish it with money, with acts of kindness, with faithfulness, with faith, with prayer. You can furnish it by all kinds of things that don't require a financial investment. So start now knowing Jesus is coming soon by making the move. What move? The move from earth to heaven. Some of us have been online the entire pandemic looking at houses, but we've never spent 5 minutes thinking about the one that is being prepared for us in heaven and making the move. You know how they say that you can't take it with you? How do they say it? You've never seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul trailer. That's because the U-Haul trailer isn't on the back of the hearse, it's on the front of the hearse. You put it there before you got in. U-Haul is the best name company probably of all time. U-Haul. No, you do. No, we don't. You do. I want to rent a truck that says we haul. But it says U-Haul. In other words, you're putting all the stuff in there. You're taking it all out. And this is heaven. You are putting all the stuff in there. And then number seven, and I hope I'm okay and not on too thin of ice on this one. Go all in on Red 14. Now that is a casino term. And I don't know if 14 is red or black on the roulette table. But I know 18 is red. I know one time we were in Las Vegas doing a Christian event. That's true. But we went to see the fountains at the Bellagio. Has anybody seen them before? Because you just wanted to see the fountains. You didn't want to go there to gamble or anything. And you can't go hardly anywhere in the Bellagio or any other hotel in Las Vegas without going through the casino. So we're walking through this massive casino. And a friend of ours is actually on the phone with a friend of his who's not with us. And he says, put something on red 18. And we're like, what is that? He goes, on the roulette wheel. So we're like, okay. So we just walk over to the roulette wheel. Boom, put something on red 18. The little ball goes in, the thing spins around. I think the odds are 36 to 1 or something like that. Bam, red 18. We like cash out and leave the Bellagio. So that might be a prophetic word to somebody. Jesus is coming soon. Red 18. But a better word is go all in on red 14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all peoples. And then the end will come. You hear people all the time saying one of two things. I'm convinced Jesus is coming soon. And I'm like, no, you're not. Oh, yes, I am. I believe he's coming soon. I'm convinced. Anybody could tell you, Jesus is coming right now. I believe he's coming. I'm not going to say this year, but I believe he's coming right now. I'm like, no, you don't. And they're like, oh, man, I'm telling you, I believe Jesus is coming soon. So have you cashed out your 401k? No. You still living in your house? Yeah. Then you don't believe Jesus is coming soon. If you believe Jesus is coming soon, you're going to cash out your 401k. And you're going to hire a guide to smuggle you into Yemen with a Yemeni translator. And you're going to go into the mountains of Yemen with a Yemeni translator preaching the gospel of Jesus for about 48 hours before you're dead. But with all the money you took out of your 401k, you've funded 100 other people to get smuggled in. So you got about 148 hours before 100 people are dead, so that the Yemenis, who are on the list of the top 8 unreached peoples on planet Earth, right up there with North Korea, Somalia, Afghanistan, Eritrea, you're in. Oh no, I believe Jesus is coming like maybe this year, Louis. Well, if you do, then put it all on red 14. Because he's not coming till all of them have heard the gospel of the kingdom of Jesus. Then he's coming. And if this is the way he's coming and when he's coming, then don't we want to go all in for the 3.2 billion people on earth today who have this much access to the gospel of Jesus? Or the 1 billion people who don't have a word of this scripture in the heart language that they understand? Jesus is coming soon. Oh, we better go all in on Red 14. I believe God has spoken today in a specific way. It wasn't in any of the notes, but just as we're wrapping and closing, I believe he's saying to someone today, let go of that offense, because Jesus is coming soon. And when he does, he's going to make it right. So let go of it and get on with your life. Oh man, I believe that's a word for somebody today. It wasn't even in the deal, it wasn't even in the thing. I can't really say it's in the text. Let go of the offense that you are carrying around, because Jesus is coming soon. And when he arrives, he's gonna find you carrying a 50-pound offense around of something somebody said to you 20 years ago. Let it go. Let it go. Yeah, but they owe me $75. Well, they never paid me back for the thing when we sold the house. Let it go. Jesus is coming, and when he comes, you'll get your $75 back. When he comes, he'll say, you were right, you were wrong. When he comes, he's gonna put everything right. And what are you doing? You are missing out on living your life because you're holding some offense that Jesus is gonna come and make right. Let it go and get on with living your life. Jesus is coming soon. He went on to say in the next few verses after this chapter, keep your lamps burning. If you don't know him, how could you possibly leave church without accepting the grace of God, who has given Jesus to forgive you of your sin and make you alive forever? Receive Jesus today. Get saved now. Jesus coming soon. You can be sure of that.